We started to deal with the question four issue. I think what we've primarily dealt with now is how did, firstly, that it is a standalone, we see it as a standalone standard. And secondly, we've dealt with how to deal with IFRS specifically. What I'd like to get onto now is almost the second part of the question, which is the timing. And that is, when do you think, if we are talking about IFRS, and we have relegated them, if you like, I think in the session earlier, to a lesser level, to make sure we're taking account of IFRS practitioners and themselves. This is just a subject now, once we take the view that we are going to be looking at IFRSs, to what extent, when do we look at them? Francois, I think you to a certain extent touched on this when you spoke earlier. So I think just to open to everybody else, when do you think we should be considering IFRSs themselves? And maybe it's worth saying at this point that the recommendation in the document, I think, dealt with this on the basis that we should consider them once they've been fully entrenched and they're in and we know they've been practiced and et cetera. The nature of the nature of the recommendation that we've made before lunch was that we would consider IFRS as only needing to need their improvement to the... That puts a little bit of a different tone on it. So we're not actually considering necessarily an operating standard. We are considering the principles of the underlying standard. So I can open to the floor. Who wants to start?
I'll start. Post-lunch lull. I think to me, if we were going to look at the standards... I think in an ideal world, it would be once they've been through post-implementation review, once we've been able to look at and completely entrenched. But I think the reality is that that if you look at the number of standards coming out over the next year or 2 years, those post-implementation reviews, et cetera, could not be done. Ideally, they would be, but if they're not done by the time we look at the standard, that I don't think that should stop us doing it. I think the nature of what we've said with the SME standards, we want to relook at it, I think it was every 3 years. And I would advocate saying that I think that's the right time to revise it. I would certainly not look at a shorter time. In fact, if everybody felt longer, I'd probably even support it. But I'm saying, if once we look at it at that every so often, every 3 years, let's say, that's the time when I think we should evaluate and say, do we think those are being done? The one thing I had thought about, and I guess I haven't really thought through how you'd do it, was when you're doing the post-implementation review, it'd almost be interesting to put out a question to say to people, do you think this is an enhancement or applicable in SMEs? And I'd almost do it as a standalone question, because I think if you did it as part of the full IFRS question, a lot of big IFRS preparers would go, well, it's not applicable to us. And also a lot of wouldn't necessarily want SME preparers going, well, we don't have to answer the 10 questions you've asked around post-implementation if you're interested in the one. So I don't know if it's something you could run in tandem. So if you're doing a post-implementation review of the standard, just ask a simple question. You know, to those of you who are SME preparers, do you think this enhances? Do you think it's applicable? Do you think it eases the burden? Maybe get some feedback.
Just Bruce, I'm not sure if you've contradicted yourself there, though.
Yeah.
Are you saying that we should wait until after the
post-implementation? No, I'm saying where there have been post-implementation reviews, I'm saying that would be fantastic to use that process. I mean, while it's out, to get some comment. But I'm saying I think that the key thing to me is when those 3 years come up for review, that's when you need to sit and say, look, what has been issued? And do we think that it's effective or not? You know, I think of some of the recent amendments that have come out here. I'd hate to turn around and say, well, because it hasn't been through a post-implementation review, we're not prepared to consider it, especially where some of those would ease the burden of SME preparers.
And do you think, given that answer, that you would then, if a standard is published, not even necessarily effective, you would consider it for inclusion?
I think we would. And I wouldn't be opposed to saying at some point going, well, actually, we're not sure this eases the burden. There hasn't been enough application of it. What we're going to do is leave this for the next review. That's fine. I think that's a perfectly acceptable answer, to say we've considered it. As it's not just effective, we're comfortable to leave it. So I wouldn't think we have to be forced into saying now, yes or no. We could just feel there hasn't been enough implementation time to do it.
Okay. Any other views?
We argument that we have way to modify the IFRS for SMEs because post-implementation review has not been completed for these new standards. But if the standards were changed, that is a reason to think that we have to pay attention to this issue tailored to the IFRS for SMEs.
Okay.
I agree. I agree fully with the staff position. I think we should wait until after the post-implementation reviews. There's absolutely no rush to amend the IFRS for SMEs as it stands now. But if there are urgent things that arise that are going to make it easier for SMEs, then we can consider those, but on an exception basis.
Would you consider, in that context, would you consider, for example, 10, 11, and 12 on an exception basis, or do you think that those are exactly the sorts of things you would wait for?
Those are exactly the sort of things I would wait for.
I concur with what's just been said. I would wait for the post-implementation review, as the staff have suggested, and particularly with 11 and 12. Yes, I'd like to see them working properly and being used well by users of full IFRS before we consider them. I think in the consideration itself, two important issues are, does this simplify or does this clarify IFRS for SMEs? And if it meets those two criteria, then I think there is great motivation for adopting the change. But the overall question really is, does this change better meet the users of IFRS for SMEs financial statements?
Just to kind of, if you like, I mean, that question sounds like it could be answered without waiting for a post-implementation review. So the post-implementation review, the reason for waiting for that?
I think that would be the starting point.
Okay.
I think our presumption would be we would wait for a post-implementation review. But if by exception we could clearly simplify or clarify something in IFRS for SMEs that clearly meets the needs of users of IFRS for SMEs financial statements, then I think we should bring it in. But then again, I like the three-year stable platform, so I'm not in favor of ongoing changes to IFRS for SMEs, and we'd still wait for the next three-year review.
So it still suggests the hurdle is absolutely so.
Yes.
Okay. So you wouldn't interrupt it halfway through?
No, I wouldn't.
That does put, and I guess this is to an extent, Bruce, where you might have been going, it does put quite a long time period between something being adopted in full IFRS and something being adopted in IFRS for SMEs.
Yes, unless it's adopted fairly close to the three-year review period.
Coincidentally.
Yeah.
I think I was going to pick up on a few similar issues on the timing of the review in terms of, obviously, I think the ISB's main agenda has been reduced onto more core projects, but if you were to just miss out on a standard or a new issue that's coming out, that's whilst I would definitely not be looking to try and predict what was going to change, I think I'd prefer a period of settling down, knowing it works within that. I'm not so wedded to the fixed three-year period. For me, it depends on activity level a little bit more, plus the sort of nature of the items. Revenue would appear to be one item in terms of the new standard, where I think there are some flaws in certain industry practices out there that would not be adverse to looking at that one. For example, I think other areas, I'm certainly less keen that we need to look at them very quickly. So I think having some element of flexibility would be useful, because you can't always mirror your agenda timetable and review timetable around. If you have it a fixed month every 3 years, then I think you may just miss out on an item and therefore wouldn't be able to pick it up. So not every year, but more agenda item driven would work better from my perspective, I believe.
For those of you supporting waiting for an implementation review, does your view change if the board extends the period for an implementation review from, say, 2 years to 5 years? Because right now we're committed to do one 2 years after the effective date. The board has received some views that the two-year period is too short and that we might need to think about a longer period for practice to evolve. Would you see it differently, Fran?
I don't think I would. I think the present standard is an excellent document, with the exception of taxation. I think it's working very well in practice. And no, I don't see a need for urgent changes to it.
I agree. I suspect that changes to full IFRS are more likely to introduce additional complexity rather than anything else. So it is not going to hurt for us to wait an additional couple of years.
Okay. Is it a fair summary then of the discussion that most people would support the view that we wait until after a post-implementation review before we consider an IFRS for inclusion into...
Sorry for coming back. To me, the coexistence of in the same jurisdiction, and many of those would have IFRS and IFRS for SMEs as part of their ecosystem or their standards architecture, that coexistence could prove a problem. I mean, you have to sort of operate with two standards. So you're on a PIE, okay, IFRS, so the definition of control is this one. You're an SME. It's the old definition under the IS 27. That, to me, I'm trying to balance this with what I hear as the added complexity or the risk of bringing untested changes that were made to the full standard. So in a way, are we considering the public interest entities as the sort of guinea pigs for the broader set of entities? I'm not convinced. So, and I see the type of issues. I think this really applies to the upper end of the SME spectrum or the large non-listed companies. I think the risk of operating with this dual sort of schizophrenic approach to certain key accounting concepts would outweigh that risk, would be more of concern to me than the supposed added complexity. I mean, in consolidation, to how many SMEs that this really apply? Business combinations likewise. So I guess I'm maybe in the minority in this case.
One point in support of that would be that there is a considerable amount of due process that goes into the release of any IFRS, including very often testing and that sort of thing to make sure that it's practical, there's been comments raised and et cetera to try and get it right. So I guess the right answer here is we have a fairly clear view of how we think it's going to be implemented, but there may be unintended implementation problems. The question is whether you would need to wait until after a implementation review to establish what those problems are, whether they become clear fairly quickly in the process.
In fact, the only time when you would, from our point of view, consider implementing a change earlier is if you identify a need from the IFRS, I mean from the IFRS for SMEs point of view, so from the SMEs point of view for doing so. So you have encountered a problem in practice in the particular area, you know, you have to solve and you look up for the what has been done in IFRS to solve the issue. But if you don't identify the need in that perspective, then you just wait.
Which again supports the view of we've got the three channels of information coming into us. If it comes through one of the other channels, we would look at IFRS earlier. If not, we would wait until such time as. Does that view change when you need... Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do think... I'm concerned that we have maybe too much of a binary view of PIEs on one hand, public interest entities, and SMEs. I think to me, it's much fuzzier. I think some, and to be consistent, I think my position is in a way consistent with the answer to the first question, which is to open the gate to probably possibly more sophisticated type of entities into this IFRS for SME4. And really, you can see that, I mean, companies listed on an alternative market might evolve into, you know, fully fledged listed companies. So I think it's too much. I see too stark a contrast being established between the two groups of companies. And to me, I really think in terms of this ecosystem, the practitioners, the standard setters, the educators, we should be careful of, you know, providing for some unity or cohesiveness in this environment. I rest my case otherwise.
Do you see a distinction then between new standards that are coming out to essentially cover new topics and standards which change existing principles like the control principle? So something like leases is going in a completely different direction, if you like, from where we are now. It might take a little bit longer to settle in. A control principle where you've got a common principle in both SMEs and for IFRS. But now that common principle might not actually be common. Do you see a distinction between those two sorts of situations?
Potentially, yes, because, I mean, one would, for the latter, when we think that the degree of risk, you know, I mean, this higher level of trial and error, if we're talking about something very new, I mean, I think financial instruments is a good illustration, IS39 one. But, you know, I recognize at the same time, you know, the things like control are really, I mean, very complex, and, you know, you learn a lot over an extended period of time and certain things because, I mean, you know, the world is evolving. Sophistication appears where it wasn't present before. But I think it's a fair also criteria to consider.
To come back to your point, Andrew, you were open to the idea that we need to look at on an exception basis. Does that suggest we should be asking the question in our reviews about new standards that have come out that regard that as an exception basis rather than as the rule that we've adopted? I mean, how do we establish
a standard? It's a bit tricky because in practice, you may have to consider the changes to full IFRS as they occur in order to decide if it might be an advantage for the IFRS for SMEs. So it's difficult to just ignore them, but yet be able to incorporate what we think might be advantageous for the SMEs.
Yes, I think it's, I keep on saying that for some concern it's a railway, right? And the railway starts at IFRS for SMEs and there are many stops along the way and ends up with the full IFRSs. So that means that you do need to have proper review, consideration of everything that has changed every now and then. That makes sense. With the provision that Frank and others have said in terms of does it make sense to be incorporated for our constituency? Clarification, simplification. Those are key principles. But we must, I think, without necessarily having to wait for post-implementation review, ask those questions when the review point comes. Always remembering that although we are talking about 3 years, a three-year cycle for initiating reviews, the actual cycle is 5 to 6 years. Because they initiated 3 years, but they take another 2 to 3 years to actually be bedded into actual practice. So we don't want to have, you know, a situation where we go for 12 years and really important changes, which, when you look at them, make sense, are left out just because we don't want to change things. It doesn't make sense.
In defining that, what would you consider a really important change, though?
Well, I'll go with Frank and the others have said. The principle of, and also Bruce said it earlier, and I think also Andrew said, our constituency, irrespective of who we want to allow to use it, our constituency are the, you know, the fundamentally the closed group of SMEs. Would this add value to them in terms of A, simplification, or B, clarification?
The right thing about that test, though, is that sounds to me like a test which would need to be applied in any case. In other words, whenever we were reviewing it, we would be asking ourselves, is this a simplification? Is this relevant to our group?
Yeah.
If I'm looking at when we should consider it,
well,
it feels to me like there almost needs to be a higher hurdle to consider it sooner, or not necessarily.
Not necessarily, to my mind. I think really we need to be open-minded. I wouldn't necessarily wait for a post-implementation review, which might mean that you might have to wait for 10 years, you know, if given the way our cycle works. I don't think that makes sense. I mean, we have to accept that there is a due process in developing IFRSs. And,
due to the small number of remaining conferences, this conference will be broken down in 40 minutes. Enter *1 to cancel and continue the conference.
I hope she's not going to count that down for the next 40 minutes.
That's our review period is up. Yeah, so I mean, it doesn't make sense, as I said, to have too rigid a system.
Okay.
I mean, anything that's too rigid is bad in practice.
It sounds to me like we're saying for at least the complicated changes we need to consider waiting until a post-implementation review has confirmed that all the working parts work. For the more principle-based issues that we believe are more relevant, we should be considering them earlier. Mm. And the only way we can tell the difference is to be putting them into the review process.
All of them, yeah.
as and when, once they become effective, yeah. And then from that point we
can decide. Due to the small number of remaining conferences, this conference will be broken down in 39 minutes.
So let's see if this quietens her down. Bruce.
I think you articulated what I was going to say. That's my view. I don't think we should have a rule around the post-implementation reviews. Mm-hmm. I think that as and when they come, we can make a decision and say, look, this we're going to wait for post-implementation review, this we're not going to. So,
and it means then as a standard, when we're actually preparing the review document, we should be putting all new IFRSs into the
Absolutely.
Review document.
Yeah.
We can then decide after that whether we feel that they've passed that threshold or that benchmark.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay. All right, any other comments? Okay, I think the next issue we just wanted to touch on was things like annual improvements and small technical issues. Now, I would imagine that everybody's fairly comfortable with the staff view, unless there's anything anybody specifically wants to add to that. Yeah. Okay. Well, then we go into the specific IFRSs that we've got to do. And to a large extent, then we've complied with our own future approach. In the absence of Michelle, I'm just going to go straight into it, I think. So IFRS 10 was the first one that we considered. I think we touched on IFRS 10 a little bit. It has the potential risk from an IFRS 10 perspective that it does touch on a principal control that is fairly broadly used in both sets of standards, and it tweaks that principle. At the same time, I think it fulfills all the arguments people have put in place for a untested, relatively complex change. Open the view on how we would apply what we've just decided on to IFRS 10.
I would think this is a good example of one that I'd probably wait a while. That would be my view. I think this is it is a change in terms of how they're doing it. I don't necessarily feel that the current approach based on 27 is fundamentally flawed. In practice, I don't think we've really seen people having major challenges with it. I mean, the whole difference in control between kind of the old SIC 12 and 27, we're not really, at the SME level, I'll be honest, I haven't really found that people are grappling with it as much as they probably were at a listed company space. So my vote would be, I think that I would leave this until we've got a post implementation.
Any other views on IFRS 10? Sorry, Michelle, we jumped straight into IFRS 10 in your absence. Was there anything you would have wanted to leave in?
Frank?
Okay, just to say, I concur.
Okay. Going on to the next one, which was applying that policy then to IFRS 13 fair value measurement. Changes specifically from there. What may be easier at this point, given the direction of the staff recommendation, I think, in this case, would be to ask the question the other way around. On any of the four C questions, are there any particular issues that anybody's concerned about that you believe we should be considering implementing into the IFRS for SMEs at this point in time?
Perhaps leave the last one that relates to the annual improvement.
Sorry, what page are we on?
29, paragraph 49, I think.
Yeah, just before paragraph 15.
So the questions now run through the various questions that were raised, or the very specific issues that were raised.
Right. Well, one on the fair value, yeah. It seems there's a lot of support in moving that the info section limit to another one, I thought. If people wanted that done, I really didn't think it was a big issue, so we have to move the fair value guidance. I felt the ICE 19 one was something we should consider.
ICE 19 one was?
Something we should consider.
Okay. So let me just first ask the IFRS 13 question then. Is everybody... So actually set it up as a separate chapter, in other words.
Yeah.
The section that deals with fair value pulls all together in one place. And say, does everybody agree with that as a...
Would that be if we make changes to it?
No.
To just move it, even though just keep it exactly as it is and move it out?
Well, that was the question we asked, wasn't it? Do we want to move it into a separate section?
So it was sort of linked to the other one as well. So, yeah. I mean, it may be that people have already been using the RFS for SMEs for 3 years, used to it in one place. Is it worth moving it out? We're not going to change it.
The primary reason for moving it into a separate area would be that other chapters in IFRS for SMEs refer to that particular guidance. Do you think there's enough of that to warrant sort of setting it up separately?
The fact that the question being asked means there must have been confusion somewhere. Mm-hmm. I just felt that if there had been some confusion, this would just be a quick fix to, you know, that didn't really require anything. We just said we're going to move the fair value guidance into a separate chapter. If that was going to make people's lives easier and the understanding of the standard easier. I think
the basis for moving into a separate section is similar to the basis for moving it into a separate IFRS.
Mm. Well, maybe it's a nice way to... Yeah, maybe it is a good way to do it because it also preps people that if at some point in the next 2 years we do decide we want to look at IFRS 13, there is a concept of fair value being separate.
And do you think separating it out now creates the impression that we've already looked at it? She's still going on. We've quietened her down, but she's still going on. Okay, that's it for IFRS 13. The other one you said, IS 19. You would look to pick up those changes in...
I thought it just made things a bit easier.
Anybody else have a view on IS-19?
I think in terms of the application of going direct to OCI, that's what it is looking for. So it will be kind of simpler than, you know, having a full P&L of actual gains and losses getting into the P&L.
And general view that this is now, I mean, we're now sort of arguing against our principles, we're relatively through a test period yet. Are you still comfortable with that?
Well, in the IAS 19R versus IAS 19, IAS 19 had the full P&L, the fast, you know, recognition through outside corridor, and then OCI. So there were three, if I'm not mistaken. Now, IAS 19R is only OCI. So you're looking at reducing the options and going into one method. So I would think it's a simple and one way that is being treated, actual gains and losses.
I'll probably just add, if you're talking about defined benefit pension schemes, we're obviously talking about generally a more sophisticated entity having that nature of a scheme rather than a DC scheme. So I think in terms of whether it's small is less, this particular issue is less of a critical element. And I think the changes themselves are fairly uncontroversial. They are taking out options and they're simplifying expected return on plan assets and aligning those sort of changes. So I think they're not particularly difficult, and given that, I say, you'd have to be of a certain size and criteria in order to probably be operating a scheme of that nature, so therefore implementing those changes and getting used to those changes I would have thought would not prove a challenge. More, you know, and the corridor has got its problems and accounting, and I think there's more complexity certainly in anything else around that than what we're trying to move towards.
the option to take the gains and losses to profit and loss was one that I was uncomfortable with, but in principle I am also uncomfortable with reducing options. So we had the option in. I think we should be slow to reduce options that we already have. But other than that, I don't have very strong feelings about it.
That sounds like an overall principle rather than a pensions principle.
It's an overall principle, yeah. That option to expense them in profit and loss was a little odd, I thought, to be allowed. But it was allowed, I guess, on the grounds of simplification. Perhaps it's just as simple to say take them to OCI. But having allowed the option, it complicates it now to to remove it. But I don't have strong feelings either way.
Any other views on this one?
I think the OCI should be removed as one of the simplifications.
Is that one other question?
Yeah.
But I don't know of an SME that's actually on defined benefit among our client base. They've all moved over the last 10, 15 years.
I think there are some jurisdictions where it is a legal requirement.
Right. Okay.
So there will definitely be some, and I think unfortunately in those jurisdictions where it is a legal requirement, it doesn't necessarily. Or there's a fairly low threshold for size before it kicks in.
Neutral.
Okay. There are no objections to it.
We have that. Yes. Even for very, very small, very tiny companies.
Are there any other point? Well, we had Frank's view on OCI. Are there any other views out of this list of things that people think we should be considering changing?
The one change, sorry, Frank's going to shoot me on this one. I agree with it, OCI, but seeing as it's going to be there. And this is also going to preempt maybe some of the discussion we have later about some of the options, but the one change to OCI I really like, and I find it's worked incredibly well in practice, is the splitting of the recycling, non-recycled. Mm-hmm. I think that was a fantastic amendment, given nobody really understands OCI in the first place. At least that has helped users in Big Eye for us understand what's going to impact earnings and what isn't. So on the basis we're keeping OCI, and I'm happy we're having that discussion later, I would strongly suggest we brought that in. I think even in SME level, it's helped users understand understand a lot more what this means.
Do you think in the limited user environment that SMEs operate in, that's as important?
I do.
We kind of argue that OCI is not as important in that.
You see, the thing is, I mean, if we start getting to other questions, we're potentially later going to talk about options to revalue and things. Suddenly now there are going to be more items on OCI. So I'm saying we've got to kind of discuss these two in tandem. If we are going to keep OCI and potentially introduce other things into it, I think it was a small thing. It's not. I don't think it's onerous in any way, shape, and form, and I do think it's better presentation. So, yeah, I would strongly support that.
Okay, again, just generally, are there any views on that, supportive or otherwise? Let me ask the question a different way then. Do we want to make a change to the standard to change the disclosure practice as regards OCI, recycled OCI, and not?
I would need to refresh my memory. I thought that there was no recycling left in the IFRS for SMEs. Am I wrong?
This isn't for foreign exchange.
Do we mean that one?
Yeah. We only require it in three cases, which is the foreign exchange, the hedging, and for pensions. Those are the only three cases with OCI.
OCI, I was asking recycling.
We prohibit it for foreign exchange.
And if a IFRS IFRS SMEs entity uses the fallback to 39?
Followed.
All right, well then, does it make sense to have it in?
It depends later when we start talking about some of the other things. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we'll hold that and perhaps come back to it as a sweep issue at the end. Is there anything else you want to ask in this specific, because we've kind of bounced through this a little bit.
Yeah, I missed the overall discussion on what people thought the overall policy should be. What was when I went out of the room?
Yeah.
So are we going to apply that to, is the SME implementation group going to propose that that's applied to all of these standards?
So in essence, the approach will be to, I'm going to get this right in my head and see if I can phrase it the way I phrased it earlier. The approach here is that we will consider from those three different sources changes. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at changes in overall IFRS, as soon as the effective date has come, it will form part of our review process. So we will ask the question about any new IFRSs that have become effective at the next review date that happens. But at that point in time, we would set a fairly high hurdle for any changes. Those changes would need to be things that are technical in nature, but not significantly technical in nature, relate to overall concepts or principles that are relevant to both sets of standards. And I think I said something else, but I just can't remember what the additional level was. Otherwise, we would kick it on and only look at it again much later on. And I think the probably what we picked up through the ISO 19 one is simple to apply and
So that was an exceptional case.
Okay. What does that mean, for example, for IFRS 3? IFRS 3 is now the SME standards, and by coincidence, we just changed the standard after 1 year after the SME implementation. Does it mean that we have the old business combination standard in SME forever, or are we going to reassess and pick out the good things of the new IFRS 3? What is that decided now, or is it part of the general policy?
They just embarked on the post-implementation review.
So generally, we would consider the review process if it wasn't something that was a necessary change at this point in time or a significant improvement. We wouldn't do anything until after the post-implementation. So once the post-implementation is finished, we will then look at it to see how it has actually fared through the implementation process.
Now, how long is it going to take for IFRS 3?
If we just started, probably about a year for the post-implementation, which means we would pick it up in the next cycle of the review. Well, that's maybe another interesting question that comes up. Do we do a review every 3 years, or do we do a review 3 years after we've introduced the last review?
It was never ever intended to be fixed, from my understanding. That the board said around every 3 years, approximately every 3 years. But obviously it would depend, I think, the timing of project. It's worth delaying it for a year or bring it.
It certainly suggests that we can do one, given we've got a number of standards that will have an effect in the area of around 2016, that we would want to do one shortly after that.
Right.
Simply to consider whether those standards need to be brought in or to consider whether we're going to wait. So I would imagine that's about the time.
Okay, so if we were to decide in 2016 to change the BISCOM standard in SME, because we may think that it's better, and it would take until 19 or 20 before the effective date is there. So we have 10 years' time, we have two different standards for business combination.
And that is exactly the issue, is that by what we're doing here is we're balancing two things. On the one, we want to provide a stable platform and only bring in tried and tested changes. But the repercussion of that on the other side is the amount of time it takes to adopt changes. And hence, and I think that was Henry's point, but he's not here now, but I think that was Henry's point. So when we do consultants, we might need to think about it just to make sure that we don't end up with too quickly. Okay.
Is it worth having a separate discussion on minor amendments, so annual improvements? The staff recommendation was that minor amendments to full IFRS to address unintended consequences should only be made when there's a known problem. So there's a presumption they wouldn't be adopted.
It's a rebuttable presumption that we wouldn't look at minor amendments unless they jumped out at us.
That's it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.